Blog Talk Radio.
Sounds of the Living Water Radio Show. Sounds of the Living Water. Sounds of the Living Water. Sounds of the Living Water Radio Show.
We teach the Bible from Genesis to Revelation. Preach the gospel unto the scattered nations. So many people are lost, it's time to be awakened. Come out of this world, it's ran by Satan. Through the Most High's laws, flee from things pagan. Understanding the word of Yah is really breathtaking. Under His love and covering is so amazing. Thank you each day, so now let's praise Him. Do things in unity, you and me. You wanna know what we're talking about? Come and see. It's time to be deeply rooted up like a tree. You want the truth, it will set you free.
Sounds of the living water. Sounds of the living water. Sounds of the Living Water Radio Show. Sounds of the Living Water. Sounds of the Living Water. Sounds of the Living Water Radio Show. Sounds of the Living Water. Sounds of the Living Water. Sounds of the Living Water Radio Show. Sounds of the Living Water. Sounds of the Living Water. Sounds of the Living Water Radio Show.
Well, good afternoon, everybody. I had to apologize to Sister Rhea. I didn't get that mail in time, but anyways, we're on. And the topic for today is Sleuth for Truth. You know, I used to be a treasure hunter for the $10,000 medallion, and I did it several years. It's a medallion buried under the snow. And I learned many lessons, especially when I started. I did some foolish things, and I got better at the medallion search as time went along. But what it boiled down to was you get a clue each day and you do research and try to figure out what that clue means. What is the real truth to that clue? And it's really fun. I get this treasure hunt fever along with thousands and thousands of other people who want their moment of glory and wealth to find that little tiny medallion that's buried in the snow, maybe in a small container or a block of ice to protect it or whatever. But anyways, in our journey in life, it's very difficult. We have an ego that, you know, our mind is very much what the ego is all about. We live in the future. We live in the past. And the present is just a fleeting, infinitely small moment. Because the moment you are present, it's already passed. So in a way, there is no such thing as time if you're totally present. You're not even aware of time. So time is kind of a myth or a lie, as some say, just as the ego is a lie. But yet, in life, when we're young, especially, it's natural to, it's healthy to have an ego, to be proud of what you do, to be the center of the universe, so to speak. It's just a natural thing. And for people to build wealth, for people to build power, those things are all, or to be a great artist, a musician, those are all healthy things. But the important part, too, is once you get there, are you fulfilled? You know, when you have your own castle and you're a successful businessman or whatever, are you fulfilled? And the argument is that you're not. There's still this emptiness within. And that's the point of the Gnostic gospel in many ways, is that you really have to dig within yourself to find the truth, to find this eternal life, to overcome, you know, the fear of death. And so anyways, just to share a little personal experience of just the other day, I had quite a intense activity. I was getting ready for a display at the Metro State College, and I was making a sign and a banner for the outdoors so that when people drive by on Highway 61 in Arcade, they'll see this geoengineering watch sign that says toxic skies, and it shows the aerosol trails with the plane. And, you know, it gets the message clearly that, you know, when you look up and see lines all over the sky like a grid pattern, what's going on? It's a very effective banner. So, you know, I finished that project after working at early morning hours. I sat after that truck driving, and I did a little poetry and kind of came upon a dead end. The point I'm getting at is there was a lot of activity, very little sleep. So, like an artist who can't find inspiration, the creative juices aren't flowing sometimes. So the next morning, there was still a lot to do for this radio blog, et cetera. But sometimes you just have to drop it for a while. In my case, you know, I needed to drop the book, The Mustard Seed, because I've used that for a lot of my blogs. But I was trying to find something, and it just wasn't showing up. And I noticed when I, you know, doing my poetry, sometimes I come to a roadblock, and it just drives me crazy. I just can't quite find the words I want to put in there to make it meaningful and rhythmic and smooth, like a rhyming poem. So what I notice sometimes, you just got to sit back and observe yourself. Do I really need to hit this roadblock? Just like when I drive, I love a smooth drive at night where I'm unimpeded, uninterrupted. It's totally peaceful. I'm the center of I'm centered. Everything's moving around me, and I'm kind of in this stillness that is so peaceful and so useful to be creative. You have this energy from within. There is no future or past. There's nothing bothering you. So there is no sense of time. And as a truck driver, I'm just, you know, something I never planned on being, a truck driver. But yet, I think my creator or God sent me in that direction for a good reason. I did discover that I can make some poems. So given the difficulty I was going through as I woke up on Tuesday morning, I sat and it's just like mental diarrhea. I need more sleep. I'm going to be working late into the evening. I'm making the transition. But as I'm trying to relax and get that last bit of sleep in, my mind is all over the place. You know, I just start worrying, and I guess the old ego starts cropping up. And it's a natural thing. When you put a lot of effort, sometimes you go kaput and you can't find that effort again. So I'll share a poem that I just did off the top of my head as I was driving. And I recite it a lot. It's kind of like a prayer. It makes me calm. But it tells about the experience of a truck driver at night. You know, when a baby is uncomfortable, often you'll take the baby in the car and they fall asleep right away. You take them for a little drive. And what is it? Why is it so effective? Well, there's two things. One is the hum of the car. I think there's a kind of a vibration level that, you know, you have that hum in the background. And also it's the drifting movement. You're kind of swaying a little bit here and then going up and down. You're kind of floating. And it's really relaxing. So here's my poem. It's called The Hum and Drift. And I also, concept of this poem is the sacred feminine, as if I'm riding with the Holy Ghost. Someone, or a spirit, the spirit of receptivity, where, you know, you can share with someone And I never had much of that where I was able to drive with my wife. Unfortunately, I would have enjoyed over the road with her. But anyways, she has the sacred feminine and the sacred feminine of the Holy Ghost, so to speak. So those two things. So here goes the poem, Hum and Drift. Come ride with me. The night is free. Let go of all your tensions. Sit by my side, eyes open wide. Your seat has air suspension. We'll roll along and float till dawn within the hum and drift. So come along, we'll sing a song. Put smiles on our lips. Let's start when sundown is orange and red. It's billowed clouds in flaming spread. Off in the distance, far ahead, lie pillowed hills, horizon's bed, that darkness fills to silhouette. From greater widths into their midst, up toward the hill's reward, on a straightaway strip at a speedy clip, we'll fade away into the rolling dip, and into darkness we will slip. The ribbon road slides into a line till nothing's left to narrow. Where road and hill are joint and still, we'll inch up to that point at will. Yet the lane we split each side unzips behind us swift as arrows, dim spaces chased by farms, black string of trees, gold rows of corn, no streaming lights or honking horns, just geese in flight, their flocks V-form. They gleam in sight and honk airborne. More creatures that adorn this earth, and life is not forlorn, there is mirth. Darkness, now it's darkness. From bygones to the great beyond, to gaze a secret's maze, terrestrials a-rolling, celestials adrift. There's something when in flow that gives us all a lift. Yes, we belong to feel the bond of living on this trip. A stop or two, we'll stretch and yawn, a cup of warmth to sip. Then resume the hum and drift neath the starry sky, a rolling on this earthen ship of sleepy lullaby. The big of bang, the yin and yang, one, powered form and drift, two, equal forces balance. Its challenge is our gift. These forces balanced sustain all life. The choir sings when there's no strife. Is there a oneness to the universe? Over hurt and puzzled curse, a rhythm to the rhyme. Perhaps it's felt when rolling steer in an autumn stealth, night crystal clear. And that's the end of my poem, but it's just enjoyable to recite it. Sometimes it just calms me down. So getting back to Sleuth for Truth, in the last blog, Myopia Leads to Dystopia, I shared the 21st and last saying of the Gnostic Gospel of Jesus the Mystic. Osho, author of the book, The Mustard Seed, explains at the end of this chapter called Become a Gardener, the importance of being true. As I have found from the past, Gulf War protests, etc., one must be eternally vigilant. Climate engineering, the most fundamental war of all, in my opinion, has become my reawakening. The cover-up that must be exposed, a mandate made easier by trials and errors in the struggle of taking on this grim news. So included today, I will, after this discussion on Sleuth for Truth and Jesus the Mystic, I will give you an update on my display sessions at Metro State Library. It's been exciting to talk to people and get going on this. and then plans to continue seeking ways to challenge the academic community so that we can bring out this topic and discuss it and debate it. And also, Dean Wigington of geoengineeringwatch.org, in his last Global Alert News section, had an update on Extinction Rebellion that I thought was quite interesting. So I'll do my best to update you after I review the today's saying. And I'll share it again. It's in the chapter, Become a Gardener. It's the 21st and last saying of the Gnostic Gospel as interpreted by Osho. And again, Osho was a guru that from India that came to the United States and made quite a debut out in the western portion of the United States. I don't know exactly where, but he had quite a following. And was controversial, needless to say, but an incredible author. So the 21st saying is, Jesus said, if you bring forth that within yourselves, that which you have will save you. If you do not have that within yourselves, that which you do not have will kill you. Jesus said, let him who seeks not cease seeking until he finds. And when he finds, he will be troubled, he will marvel, and he will reign over all. And he said, whoever finds explanation of these words will not taste death. So that's quite a powerful closing, you know, of the Gnostic Gospel. And again, to me, it's interesting to consider that these Gospels remain hidden in a cave, if I understand right, in the Nag Hammadi archaeologic finding. And why would they be hidden in the cave if they're so powerful? They have so much wisdom to offer, signposts into to guide us, you know, spiritually. Why would these signposts of words be hidden that can effectively guide us to a to be one with the universe instead of separate from it? So again, with the word power structure, it seems that, you know, as we invented technology like agriculture to store food and become independent of droughts and the weather and nature, we started seeing nature more as an enemy, something to be controlled, something of an anarchy that we need to make our own order, and in the process, step out of the Garden of Eden, where, you know, as agriculture was invented, our earth was at a time of equilibrium after years and years and eons and eons and eons of turbulence and volcanoes and ice glaciers and floods and extinctions. It's been said, at least by scientists, that, you know, for several thousand years, the Earth has reached kind of an equilibrium where this planet is teeming with diversity of species unrealized from the past. A very much a thriving planet where, as humans developed in this thriving planet, it became the point where they became so clever with their mind and their ability to invent and find out the secrets of the physical world that it kind of overtook us. The spiritual world, you know, the physical world at the cost of the spiritual world, I guess is what I'm trying to say. So it seems to me, even back then when the Bible was written, that if this section or the Apocrypha or other sections weren't included, perhaps there was already that hierarchy of ego, where, you know, that those that climb up and have power and control are addicted to it, and it's the higher the archy in scale, the more the malarkey in trouble. And it seems that perhaps the fall of man is viewed by the victims who fought the original farmer Cain versus Shepherd Abel, It makes sense to me that why wouldn't these scriptures be hidden? And because if the story of Genesis had a twist in it, this would be to the advantage of those who wrote it, those who were in the hierarchy. So that's why the Gnostic gospel, which basically explains that, yes, there's a heaven within. There's a mustard seed that we all have that's the same thing. And if we search within ourselves, which is not an easy thing, given our ego and our sense of the future and the past and tension and crying and pain, it's a hard thing to find. But there is a way to it. And the Gnostic gospel and Jesus shows that way, as well as in the New Testament. Again, there's an overlap of some of these sayings, some within the New Testament and some outside of it. So I'm quite sure this last one, you know, is outside of it, outside of the New Testament, but yet so pertinent to our understanding, to our ability to transform ourselves. And as Eckhart Tolle, the author I talked about two blogs ago, has been saying, and I agree with this, that Jesus did his best to the Western culture, the Farmer Cain culture, to explain that, look, you know, I'm setting an example here of how to live in a way where you're one with the universe, you're in accord with nature. The wisdom, the things I've experienced in my life, that is Jesus' life, whether he went out east to learn from Eastern philosophy, Eastern culture, which I believe he did, he had to earn and learn his way to become an enlightened man. Why would somebody just be given some magical miracle powers, just, you know, born divine? Perhaps prophecy that a man would come about, but the prophesied man also has to learn. And so with this profound individual, whether Buddha or Jesus Christ, the author Osho really highlights Jesus to the nth degree. He really does. And I think it's so special, this 21st saying. And let me delve into it a little more. I just have to pause here to organize, pardon me, but it's pretty deep stuff. And I just have to find where I was at. Success fails, and failure becomes conversion. The longer we live in life through science, we have questions. We are afraid of death. We want to live longer. I remember now that, you know, it's interesting where we have the capability now in science to perhaps, let's say somebody can live 300 years. And so are we at peace now, knowing that, you know, do we no longer have to fear death, knowing that we can live so darn long? If that's in the realm of possibility? Of course, the answer is no. Still, we're going to have that haunting fear of death all throughout the 300 years if we can live that long, at least unless, you know, we find our way within. And the mustard seed story is one where we all have a mustard seed. It's the tiniest thing within us. It's such a tiny seed that can grow a flourishing tree that hosts many creatures, millions of birds, a gigantic tree. And that's what's likened to the heaven, the kingdom of heaven, and that it's something you can find within you. And the problem with our egos is that since we fear death, that little tiny seed, it's only a bridge to eternity. And we tend to protect that seed coat. We don't want to let it go, because it's in our world of lies, where we don't understand things well. We hang on to lies to protect our ego, to protect that little tiny speck of a seed that's within us, instead of actually looking within us, growing within, having courage to face the outer world as well as the inner world, and to grow the garden, as Osho says, you know, be a gardener. In other words, you have to water, you have to plant the seed in fertile soil and water it, and eventually that seed of fear, that seed of the fear of death will dissolve. And you'll find this everlasting sense of peace, and where death, even in your physical life, won't hinder you. It won't prevent you from living to the fullest. And the I might as well skip over to the end. I'm a little in and out of my notes here, but this page says it so well. So I'll just read directly some outstanding words. One who has tasted the final mystery of existence will not taste death. Death is no more for him. Death exists only because of the mind. Death exists only because of the ego. Death exists only because you are identified with the body. If you are not identified with the body, if you don't have a mad ego within you, if you are centered, and as I say, centered, like when I'm in my truck, you get that stillness and peace. If you are centered in the self, death disappears. Death is there because you are alive. If you become true, death disappears. There is no death for the truth. It is eternal. It is eternal life. So this is the vicious circle. Because you are a lie, there is death. And because of death, you become more afraid. You create more lies around you to protect yourself. Then you get entangled in a vicious cycle, or a vicious circle. One has to be alert and jump out of it. And, you know, I have to stop there, because to jump out of the circle. When I, you know, part of the ego is being stubborn, and I'm a champion at that. And I'll give you an example. I was just trying to send some photos to the geoengineeringwatch.org website, photos of which I'm really proud of. I feel good about the fact I'm showing them that I've got displays, and I could not figure out how to do it. I know it's extremely simple, but to transfer these pictures from my phone to my computer to an email, I couldn't do it. And yet I have to, you know, I want to prepare for this blog. So I'm getting pinched for time, struggling to figure out. And, you know, it's so hard not to be stubborn, so egoic, and just drop things. Just drop it. You know, it can go later. It's not the end of the world. So if I'm a little disorganized, that's one of my egotistical problems, I guess, is that I get so obsessed that I get a little scrambled for time and stressed, and thus not as effective. But I'll go on reading. Death is a problem because ego exists. And ego is the most false thing possible, the most illusory thing possible. It is not there. You have to maintain it somehow. It has to be constantly maintained. It is not a real phenomenon. And again, understand that the development of the ego is healthy. Otherwise, you don't know life experience. In other words, if you become wealthy and it doesn't fulfill you, at least you've been there, done that, and are beyond it. So it's not a real phenomenon. If you leave it even for 24 hours, it will die. 24 hours is too long. 24 minutes will do, even 24 seconds. You have to feed it continuously. You have to pull it up. You have to manipulate it. You have to support it. Your whole life, you work for it so that the dream that you are somebody can be maintained. And then in death, it has to disappear. Then you feel the fear. you become unconscious. You are reborn in another body in an unconscious state. And the whole vicious circle starts again. So this is introducing something that, at least as far as the Western world is concerned, doesn't exist perhaps, or a very controversial statement about reincarnation. But I just find it interesting that, you know, to be open to whatever. And this I find real interesting. So I'll repeat that. Your whole life, you work for it so that the dream that you someday can be maintained, that you are somebody, can be maintained. And then in death, it has to disappear. Then you feel the fear. You become unconscious. You are reborn in another body in an unconscious state. And the whole vicious cycle starts over again. And I think I read something that's called the Dharma wheel. It's a certain karma that we have. And, you know, the wheel, meaning it goes around and around. So we can jump off that wheel. So don't be a lie. Start dropping lies. Start dropping masks. And again, mask. That's everything. Everything about climate engineering. Nothing is could be more masked. It's a lie from the media. It's, you know, the media says there is no such thing as climate engineering. Scientists will say we should use geoengineering. We've never tried it before, yet it's been done for 70 years. Mask after mask after mask. Or let's make the climate super cold. You know, they use these operations to make a toxic low-level cool down. What a perfect mask to confuse people so that, there's no crisis of heat, the severity of global warming. Look at how cold it was in this blizzard. So, you know, countless masks in climate engineering, the ultimate war against nature, the ultimate mask, the ultimate lie of our human species. Don't take my word for it, but that's something we can all research. So, and try to be whatsoever you are. Don't try to pretend to be that which you are not. Because pretensions won't save you. They are the very burden which is going to drown you. The truth saves. Jesus has said, truth liberates. Truth saves. Truth becomes eternal life. In the last part of the verse, and he said, whoever finds explanation of these words will not taste death. And the same I say to you, that this is Osho speaking. If you can taste yourself, you will not taste death. If you can know yourself, you will never know any death. And that which can save you is already there, but it is a mustard seed. Help it to grow. And the first help that you can give is to help it to die. Don't cling to the seed, because the seed is a bridge. It is not the goal. Help it to die, dissolve, so that the inner life hidden in it is freed, and the seed becomes a great tree. Small is the seed, but the tree will be very great. Almost invisible is the seed. And the tree? The tree will become a great refuge. Millions of heavenly birds will take shelter in that tree. Truth not only saves you, it also saves others through you. Truth only becomes freedom to you. It becomes a door of freedom for many others also. If you become a light, it is not only your life that will be lighted. If you become a light, then you also become a light for millions. Many can travel and reach their goal through you. If you become a light, you become a representative, you become a Christ. I don't want you to become Christians. That is useless. That is a lie. I would like you to become Christs. And you can become Christs because you have the same seed. And then Osho says on all his chapters, enough for today. Well, I decided to read through because it goes clearly and unjumbled, and because that's such a profound couple of pages there that I just shared. But I would, maybe when I delve into some of my notes, I can think of some of my own experiences, or again, I'd welcome anyone listening to ask and share their experiences. But there was one part that I'm trying to find, and I guess I can't find it, but I'll say it without even reading it. When I was having a difficult time coming up with this idea to spend an hour on this blog, it was the morning of Tuesday, and I was laying in bed, and what am I going to talk about? And I just kind of had a dead end. And, the tendency in life is to be sleepy. When you get stressed and tensed, you may put some hard work out there, but often, one kind of gives in and they start yearning for sleep. So it's just a natural tendency to be heavy and, lethargic. That's the word Osho used. And whereas an enlightened person, you think of it, yes, they do sleep, but they sleep effectively. And when they wake up, they jump out of bed because they are so enthusiastic. And again, it may be for egotistical reasons. You want to do a project and you want to achieve something. Maybe like my daughter was in a science fair one time. Well, that's wonderful. More power to you. When we're present and waking, we're in a state of timelessness, more or less, and that's healthy. But again, people may find that as they climb up the ladder of wealth or climb up the ladder of power, that something's missing, that inner search hasn't taken place, that emptiness within. So, it's a tricky thing. One must be very wary and open-minded that, we've known of famous actors commit suicide where these totally vibrant, alive people on the television, all of a sudden they're gone. Something put them into profound profession or depression or drugs or whatever. And again, drugs often will, or medications or addictions will often shelter us from ourselves and the lies that we're in. They'll give us kind of a temporary refuge, but they'll only delay that that truth that we seek. So with that, I've talked about science, the longer life through science, yet we have the problem of living long but still not living fulfilled. We have hands to manipulate what's outside of us, and nothing is needed inside of us. In other words, that mustard seed that we all have, it's perfect. You just need to nurture it so it grows. And the problem we have, we fear the seed may die. There was a real good story, a fable, about a man who wanted to find out which son would inherit the kingdom or would be the chosen king or leader, of the family. Let's not call it king. There's many words. But of the three sons, the eldest, he gave seeds, very rare seeds. And he asked each son, how would you take care of these seeds? And when I come back in 1 year, I want to see what you have done with these seeds. So the first eldest son thought, I'll do something real clever here. I'm going to lock these seeds inside a safe, so that, you know, when the father comes back, I'll have the seeds, and I'll just give him the seeds. That's what his request was, to preserve these seeds. The second son thought, the second oldest son thought, well, why don't I sell these seeds? And when I have, with that same money, when father comes back, then I'll rebuy those same type of seeds. So then I'll have fresh seeds. They won't die in the vault or won't dry up. And the third and youngest son, not knowing as much, just by intuition, said to himself, well, you know, I'll plant the seeds. If I plant the seeds, there will be flowers. And from the flowers, these same seeds will come about. Anyone listening, I can imagine, can guess who the winner was. Of course, it was the younger son. The father came back and, you know, said to the eldest that this was foolishness. You know, these seeds are no good. They've been sitting in a safe. They won't even grow. And the second, to the second, he said, well, this was better. But what you did, you did not, you know, I have the seeds back, but nothing's come of them. You know, whereas the third son said, you've done the right thing. You grew the seeds, and now we will have multitudes more seeds. And of course, these were rare seeds. So the flowers that grew, they could harvest more seeds. So that was a pretty neat story. And I'm just going to take a quick look at the time here. And I've got a few minutes left. And we'll see. Here's another interesting point. Jesus, if the way he lived, he accumulated awareness, not necessarily knowledge. Knowledge is of the brain. And, you know, awareness, wisdom. In other words, he connects all the dots. And the problem with scientists, for example, is they find some revelation of God's plan, but they're in their own little bubble with it and not understanding the rest of the big picture. And that's one reason we have so many technologies that have been more or less weapons that have gone bad, like nuclear technology. So wealth, power, talents, none of them will save you. You have to gather weight. And when we die, you know, we have to leave that behind. It's the shore that we're on. It has to be left on shore. To get to the other shore, you can't bring all these things with you. So consciousness, that equals the innermost self. That gets you to the other shore. And, you know, even knowledge, we can't take our brain with us to the other shore. That's, you know, the brain is like a computer. It stores a lot of knowledge. So what matters, what I should say is material and knowledge. Knowledge is the inner link. And awareness is the consciousness of being alert. And just like in Pompeii, when the volcano came about, people grabbed their valuables, whatever they could, as they ran in the dark. But one man was with a walking stick. He was as if he was going for his usual walk at 3 a.m. He'd do that every day. And people came by and said, why are you doing that? Well, he was in perfect peace. In other words, he didn't need valuables. He was just at peace, even amidst the disaster of a volcano. So awareness is the only ray of light in human life that transcends death. Anesthesia, the body has its own. The whole of life is a preparation to be aware of death. Lives are different, but yet the inner search is not. it is the same for us all. So a point where we become so conscious, even death can't make you unconscious. Those who have more and those who don't have. In other words, those who have consciousness seek more, and those who don't have consciousness tend to want to have it taken away. You know, it's a momentum thing. And that's why I'm saying when one feels lethargic, that's often, you know, kind of we're living as if we're dead. Our mind is racing and we're not going anywhere, and we're feeling kind of like we're wasting our time. We don't know what to do. We're kind of in a panic. That's so out of that experience, a lot of times we long to sleep and be lazy or go eat or drink alcohol or whatever. And again, the first ray of consciousness, the mustard seed, we tend to move with inferiors because then you feel superior. Seek the superior, drop your ego and move in circles, you know, people with wisdom, find them, be attracted to them. And I've already talked about the mind is lethargic, but he goes to the hippie era in the United States. He doesn't mention it, but Osho talks about Zen, where the Zen teaching is to just be at ease and relax. And it gets misinterpreted because Jesus teaches you to be outgoing and Zen teaches you to be ingoing and relaxed, kind of at peace, like the hippies. But the mistake here, according to Osho, is that unless one works hard to get there, to get to that state of calm, you're not doing it properly if you haven't worked to get there in the first place. Then you can be calm. And, you know, Zen often is from the vantage point of masters, people who have already lived a very full life, are at this stage of confidence and are become, you know, great sages who don't need a lot of effort to get things done. I thought that was interesting. So, and then there's something in the verse about troubles. When you find deep within the revelation of this eternity, you're troubled. And some, it may be too much. It overtakes them that they become frightened and run away from it. It's like being in a dark room for years and years, and all of a sudden you're exposed to the bright sky. It's too much. And Osho reasons that maybe that's how atheists come about, where they've had this kind of experience, this change that was so dramatic that the fire was too much, the light was too much, and they became frightened of it, and they ran away from it, more or less, and they deny it. And that's, you know, what atheism is in a way. Little history, Jesus was from the Essenes, and they have a saying that the dark of night of the soul, that's when you should be happy, because the darker it is, the nearer is dawn, the womb through which the ultimate blessings are born. And I'll stop here, otherwise I'll just ramble. I did want to get to the update portion. Extinction Rebellion, I heard some news about that, and this was real interesting. Brother Job, I don't know if you're listening, but you had warned me that watch out with Extinction Rebellion, because if you're really deeply involved with it, you may get locked down and put in prison, or, you know, you may get in legal trouble. And as Dave Wigington had observed this international phenomenon go on, he did warn that, you know, I don't know, he didn't have much trust that they're really going in the right direction. Number one, mass protests don't always work. They often get big news and then they just puff out. And without even the mention of the most important topic of climate engineering, you know, he's very skeptical that why, again, when you talk about an overheated Earth running toward a runaway meltdown, extinction, or whatever, yes, that's legitimate. But when you focus on nothing but fossil fuels and totally avoid this destructive technology that mathematically is the most disruptive force on the planet, then you're missing the point. And, you know, the wisdom isn't there to deal with it in a strategy that works. And not to put these people down, they're on the right track. The concern is legitimate, but unfortunately there's this betrayal still of environmental groups, hardcore betrayal, that climate engineering is not the factor to even pay attention to. And so what happened with these recent events, from what I understand, like in England, where that's been a hub of the Extinction Rebellion movement, is the police this time decided, instead of just cooperatively stand by as long as these people aren't doing a lot of violence, they cracked down. And from what I understand is, you know, they put down these protests pretty vigorously. They had time to plan, to say, look, we've had enough of this. Law enforcement has had enough of this. This time we're going to crack down. So, again, it's questionable with Extinction Rebellion the degree of success that they'll gain, the strategy they're using. So it's felt good for me, because even if I'm just an individual, and I'd love to have a group, I'd love to have a group called Sleuths for Truth, where we could have 50, 100 people with signs saying, search this in the internet, like Project Cloverleaf or Project Storm Fury. You know, it would be great to have some kind of catalyzing event that could go viral on the internet, such as Sleuths for Truth, you know, where climate engineering gets momentum, and I think it is getting momentum. But will it be fast enough momentum? That's the big question. But when I do these exhibits individually, you know, I may not be a student, but I'm at a public library, and random people come by. Most, 9 out of 10, don't give a dang, and I understand they've got a busy life. But there are some where my exhibit will catch their eye. And one man yesterday, he went by two times and just, you know, kind of, he looked hesitant and then he kept walking. And then finally he just stopped. And we had at least a 20-minute conversation. And it was really encouraging how, you know, I was able to explain how this invisible power is what we don't see, and that's why this is so effective. The invisible power of microwave transmissions interacting with the electroconductive particles that they spray from the aerosols that they spray from jet planes. So going to the Metro State and Dayton's Bluff Public Library Center, I'm restricted to Dayton's Bluff Public Library because I'm not a student, but I'm right in the border there where students can see me. So, and faculty or whoever, the janitor, you know, anybody's welcome to find out. It's been, you know, real gratifying to find the spot fires, or to spread the spot fires of awareness. And by coincidence, I have to laugh. My outdoor display, which is a 2x4 banner two banners, one on each side, and then a box with the literature. I have the photo fact sheet inside the wooden box that I've made, which I put on a post. And then I have a little sign by the post that, you know, shows the photo fact sheet, both the front and back, and it's protected, you know, on a plastic veneer surface. But, you know, I needed somebody to take a picture of me because I wanted to send it to geoengineeringwatch.org. As people from all over the country are acting on this issue, some are at farmers markets, some are putting road signs like I have, you know, along Highway 61 in my case, which is a very busy place that a lot of people see this, visibly see the sign that I put up, the banner. But the men who are working construction next door on some kind of carpentry, they stopped and they saw me trying to take a selfie, and I couldn't do it because I don't have a long enough arm to get the sign and my face in. And they took a picture of me. We engaged in a conversation. They were really highly interested in this. One of the men, his wife talked about chemtrails and flat earth and other things. And he was really curious, and he was really glad to find, you know, a credible source of information. He was eager to take this to his wife. So those spot fires are spreading. And with that, I'll wrap things up here. It's almost 4 o'clock, almost time for me to go to work. And if anybody's out there, any questions, I'll be glad to take them. Okay, Sister Rhea. Again, it's too bad. I was so busy, I didn't catch that email. I'm just wondering, Brother Job or Sister Rhea, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Forgive me. I didn't want to talk. Oh. I have a cold.
Oh, sorry. No, that was my sister-in-law. Yeah.
It's okay. My husband should be on there, too. I don't know if he muted himself, but yeah. We can hear you.
Yeah, that's fine. Tell you what, Sister Rhea, as I have to get to work soon, I'd be glad just to close the program.
Okay.
And so thank you so much for letting me on. I enjoyed it.
We appreciate you and love you. You just don't know, on Facebook, so many people, they're still at work, so some click later on when they get home.
Okay,
to the
good.
So I just wanted to let you know that as well.
When I figure out the technology, I will send those pictures I took today so you can put them on Facebook.
Okay, will do. That would be great. Thank you.
Okay, bless you. Heal fast.
Sounds of the Living Water Radio Show. Sounds of the Living Water. Sounds of the Living Water. Sounds of the Living Water Radio Show.
We teach the Bible from Genesis to Revelation. Preach the gospel unto the scattered nations. So many people are lost, it's time to be awakened. Come out of this world, it's ran by Satan. Through the Most High's laws, flee from things pagan. Understanding the word of Yah is really breathtaking. Under His love, we're covering it, so amazing. Thank you each day, so now let's praise Him. Do things in unity, you and me. You wanna know what we're talking about? Come and see. It's time to be deeply rooted up like a tree. You want the truth, it will set you free.
Sounds of the Living Water. Sounds of the Living Water. Sounds of the Living Water Radio Show. Sounds of the Living Water. Sounds of the Living Water. Sounds of the Living Water Radio Show. Sounds of the Living Water Radio Show. Sounds of the Living Water. Sounds of the Living Water. Sounds of the Living Water Radio Show.